The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Doris Hyde from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Psychology Today, Do the Blind See in Their Dreams? World Blind Union is issuing a survey on why they don't have more women in leadership. That survey feedback is due by January 31st. The ATIA conference is looking for feedback on the use of Nearby Explorer and Indoor Explorer apps. Fiction Old and New meets February 2nd. Science Fiction Book Club meets February 8th. Worlds of Books meets February 20th. The Beckdot Braille Learning Game has been interviewed on WBUR Public Radio recently. The Midwest High Speed Rail has a blog post about why Uber shouldn't take over the alternative transportation world. And Delta has new rules regarding service animals that should make flying easier with them by eliminating all those bogus pets. Today's reading of Vision News is underwritten by an anonymous gift in loving memory of Joe and Kelly. From worldblindunion.org, WBU survey on empowerment of blind or partially sighted women. The World Blind Union Women's Committee has launched a survey to establish an improved understanding of the current situation and barriers to women assuming leadership roles in all regions of the WBU. Members are requested to share this survey with blind and partially sighted women and encourage them to complete and return it to the WBU Women's Committee to aid in determining the reason for a low number of women leaders. Following results from the survey, the committee will develop an action plan to deal with barriers and combat discrimination preventing women from becoming leaders. The deadline for the survey is 31st January 2018. For more details, please download the questionnaire at the hot link on the website worldblindunion.org/english/news/pages/wbu-survey-on-empowerment-of-blind-or-partially-sighted-women.aspx. This from Terrell Jones. Hello, please share this information with as many people as possible. The American Printing House for the Blind would like feedback from attendees at this year's Assistive Technology Industry Association conference. You can send feedback to technology@aph.org. There is a new tool available that makes orientation and mobility much more efficient and effective for blind attendees at this year's Assistive Technology Industry Association, ATIA, conference held at the Caribe Royale in Orlando. Helpfully, the three main halls are already named alphabetically, so blind attendees can usually get pretty close to the sessions in which they are interested. Getting to sessions not in those three halls has always been more challenging. This year, though, blind attendees have access to a complete interactive map of the convention center and hotel lobby buildings. The free Nearby Explorer online and paid Nearby Explorer apps for iOS, Android coming soon, recently added support for indoor venues, and the Caribe Royale, where the conference is held, has been configured with the beacons to support this amazing new feature. Just like with outdoor spaces, Nearby Explorer announces points of interest in your vicinity and lets you use the compass and geobeam to help you orient to other areas within the building. You can also use the map to familiarize yourself before you arrive. Here's how it works. Once you start the Nearby Explorer app, it downloads the map for the state in which you are located or virtually located. Then, when it detects a beacon represented in the map, the app looks up the location of that beacon and gives you all the benefits of using the app in outdoor spaces, except now instead of names of buildings, you get room names and doorway locations. You do not need to do anything to activate the feature when you arrive. Just start the app. APH's project leader, Keith Creasy, is conducting several training sessions in the APH suite. Come to the APH booth in the exhibit hall to learn time and location for demos of the app. To look at the map now before you arrive, follow these steps. 1. Open Nearby Explorer or Nearby Explorer online. Download the Florida maps from the OpenStreetMap Manager button in the Settings tab. Activate the search button and type 8101 World Center Drive, Orlando, Florida 32821 in the text field. Then activate the search button. The app responds with all the possible matches. In this case, there's just one. 2. Activate the result. The app responds with another menu with choices about what you want to do with the location. 3. Select Virtual Go-To from the menu. The app responds by returning to the home screen with your location now set to the Caribe Royale in Orlando. 4. Activate the search button again to show places nearby. 5. Select one of the results and pick Add to Favorite from the menu. The next time you wish to look here, select the Favorites button from the bottom of the home screen, then pick this location. 6. Now select OpenStreetMap from the bottom of the search provider. A whole new list of search results appears with POIs from OpenStreetMap. These are still outdoor locations. 7. To see the indoor locations, activate the Level Up button. It looks like an escalator with an upward pointing arrow. Now the search results shown are from the ground floor of the area. 8. Pick a location of interest and virtually go to it, or save it as a favorite for later use. Once you are virtually in the area, use the compass feature by holding your phone up in portrait orientation as if you were taking a picture, and rotate the camera backside in the direction of interest. Compass responds with all the rooms in that direction, nearest to furthest. To pinpoint locations and get an idea about surrounding areas within the building, use GeoBeam to point to specific areas. As you point to a room, the app vibrates, emits a beep indicating the relative distance, and announces the item to which you are pointing. As long as you keep the phone vibrating, you are pointing at it. Combining maps, GeoBeam, and compass gives the blind attendee a much stronger sense of orientation and helps find rooms that may not be familiar. Respectfully, Terrell Jones, phone 615-419-2429, email tjwhtn@gmail.com. From www.psychologytoday.com, do blind people see in their dreams? During sleep, one type of electrical oscillation in the brain called PGO waves, pontogeniculate occipital, are thought to activate the visual cortex and serve as a visual dream generator during REM sleep. These particular brain oscillations appear just before REM sleep begins, about 30 to 90s, and they project from the brainstem to the occipital cortex and visual system. The location of PGO waves seems to indicate where and when eye movements will occur, and these eye movements in turn are thought to indicate where one is viewing visual dream content. For instance, PGO waves on the right side of the brain will precede an eye movement and visual dream content in the right visual field. PGO waves on the left side predict eye movements to the left. It seems that these electrical oscillations are thus stimulating eye movements and exciting corresponding areas of visual cortex, with dream visuals being seen where the activity has occurred. A recent research paper by Bartolo Mestre Barrio and Antona, copyright 2017, was designed to answer the question of whether blind subjects exhibit eye movements and visual activity during REM sleep similar to sighted subjects, and if so, whether this is the case even in blind subjects who have been blind since birth. In fact, studies have shown that the dreams of blind subjects who lost vision later in life contain colors, movement, and visual patterns similar to reports of sighted individuals. This is not unexpected, since subjects who became blind later in life would still have memories of visual experience and thus maintain a capacity for visual imagery. But what about those who have been blind since birth and thus have no visual memories at all? Because the researchers felt it impossible to know for sure the visual quality of imagery based on dream reports, they decided to additionally study the eye movements during dreams of congenitally blind subjects. 20 adult subjects were recruited for this study, including 10 congenitally blind and 10 sighted subjects. All of the subjects underwent 2 consecutive nights of polysomnographic recordings at home, with several awakenings for dream recall. The initial results found that the frequency of dream recall did not differ between the two groups, with an average of 60% dream recall reported following REM sleep awakenings. The dream reports of the blind subjects were reported as perceptually vivid and contained reference to visual, tactile, auditory, and kinesthetic as sensation. There was no difference between the two groups in the vividness of the dreams, or even in the quantity of visual content reported. Nevertheless, the blind subjects had fewer rapid eye movements than the sighted subjects, although they did have eye movements, and these eye movements did correlate with visual dream recall. The authors argue that the fact that blind subjects present rapid eye movements, and that these are correlated with visual dream recall, is another result supporting our argument that they do activate the visual areas during dream, being able to generate their own visual imagery. To explain the finding that subjects who have been blind since birth still seem to exhibit visual activity during REM sleep and dreaming, the authors turn to another study of eye movements in individuals who have never experienced any visual input, human fetuses. Schupf et al. 2014 conducted a study comparing in utero eye movements to neural activity using fMRI data acquired from 7 fetuses. During the study, fetal eye movements were recorded and corresponded with fMRI data. Results showed that already in utero, fetal eye movements correspond with activity in visual and frontal cerebral areas. This suggests that the human visual system is active even prior to birth. The authors thus argue that if fetuses can dream, presumably with visual imagery, without ever having visual experience, who's to say the same cannot happen with blind subjects? Therefore, we propose that our results support the hypothesis that congenitally blind, rapid eye movements during dreams are able to generate visual imagery without visual experience. Fiction Old and New will be discussing America's First Daughter by Stephanie Dre and Laura Kamoye in the Book Nook Room of AccessibleWorld.org on Friday, February 2nd at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Here's the annotation. https://nlsbard.loc.gov/nlsbardprod/download/detail/src/db88020. America's First Daughter, DB88020. Dre, Stephanie. Kamoye, Laura Crohan. Reading time, 21 hours, 53 minutes. Read by Pilar Witherspoon. Historical fiction. Patsy Jefferson, eldest daughter of Thomas, grows up during the tumult of the American Revolution. When her mother dies, she joins her father in France and is torn between love and filial duty when courted by an abolitionist. This conflict of desires follows her through life. Some Violence, 2016. Co-hosted by Sherry Wells, sherrywells1157@gmail.com. Michelle Bernstein, male, hamletssweetlady@gmail.com. Date, Friday, February 2nd, 2018. Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, and elsewhere in the world, Saturday, 1 o'clock, Greenwich Mean Time. About 15 minutes before start time, go to http://conference321.com/masteradmin/room.asp query ID=RS7867A2369E0E. Or alternatively, go to http://www.accessibleworld.org/ and click on the Book Nook Room. Enter your first and last names on the sign-in screen. If you are a first-time user of the Talking Communities online conferencing software, there is a small safe software program that you need to download and then run. A link to the software is available on every entry screen to the Accessible World Rooms. After you have downloaded the simple software, enter the room. Hold down the control key to talk and let up to listen. All of our programs are recorded and archived. You may wish to subscribe to the Accessible World Announce list. Write to aw-announcements-subscribe at groups.io. Accessible World contacts, Robert Acosta, Chair. Accessible World, 818-998-0044. Email boacosta@pacbell.net. Web, www.helpinghands4theblind.org. Steve Hoffman, President, Talking Communities. Email steve@talkingcommunities.com. The Accessible World, a division of Helping Hands for the Blind, a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, seeks to educate the general public, the disabled community, and the professionals who serve them by providing highly relevant information about new products, services, and training opportunities designed specifically to eliminate geographic and access barriers that adversely affect them. From Newswire, the Science Fiction Book Club meets Thursday, February 8, 2018 at 9 p.m. Eastern. A smaller-than-usual turnout at our most recent meeting, but we still had a good discussion of some books we mostly enjoyed. The main books mentioned at this meeting were 1632 by Eric Flint, Honor Harrington series by David Weber, mentioned twice, Liege Killer, The Paratwa Saga, Book 1 by Christopher Hins, The Rise and Falls of the Dodo, a novel by Neal Stephenson and Nicole Galland, Tomorrow's Children, 18 Tales of Fantasy and Science Fiction, edited with an introduction by Isaac Asimov. The next meeting of the Science Fiction Club will be Thursday, February 8, 2018. Time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific, and 2 o'clock Universal Time. Place, Book Nook at http://conference321.com/masteradmin/room.asp query ID=RS7867A2369E0E. Come join us for our next meeting to talk about your favorite or least favorite SF book. Signed, Evan. Worlds of Books meets the third Tuesday of each month at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, meeting Tuesday, February 20th in the Book Nook Room of AccessibleWorld.org to discuss If Looks Could Kill, DB54169 by Kate White. The Book Nook Room can be found at http://conference321.com/masteradmin/room.asp query ID=RS7867A2369E0E. Here is the NLS annotation. If Looks Could Kill, DB54169. https://nlsbard.loc.gov:443/nlsbardprod/download/detail/src/DB54169. White, Kate. Reading time, 10 hours, 37 minutes. Read by Barbara Penalini. Mystery and Detective Stories, Bestsellers. New York crime writer Bailey Wiggins helps her friend and boss, magazine editor-in-chief Kat Jones, discover who poisoned her nanny. Kat fears that she herself was the target as Bailey uncovers adultery, jealousy, and backstabbing among the city's literary elite. Some violence and some strong language. Bestseller, 2002. Here is the Bookshare synopsis. Bailey Wiggins, the very clever and very irreverent true crime writer for leading women's magazine Gloss, is dragged into a murder by her editor-in-chief boss from hell. Kat Jones interrupts Bailey and her lover in the early hours of the morning, demanding that Bailey find her son's nanny, missing from the morning roll call. Bailey arrives at the townhouse and finds the nanny's dead body amidst seafoam towels, vomit, and a golden box of truffles. Death by chocolate becomes literal as forensics soon reveals a garden variety poison. As Bailey looks into who killed the nanny, her search takes her from the swankiest Connecticut suburbs to Bucks County weekend parties. She discovers that Kat, not the nanny, may have been the intended target of the poison candy, and everyone becomes a suspect, especially the catty editors at Gloss, many of whom have it in for the chocoholic boss from hell. Then Bailey uncovers that this may be a conspiracy to do away with all the editor-in-chiefs of women's magazines. The police are on the case, but it is Bailey who closes in on the killer and learns just what people will do to protect their reputation. Copyright 2002. ISBN number -13:978-075-952-7973, published by Grand Central Publishing. From WBUR.org/here-and-now/2018/01/12/usher-syndrome-beckdot. His 2-year-old daughter is slowly going blind, so he invented a game to help her learn Braille. The majority of adults with a visual disability in the U.S. are also unemployed. The jobless rate is close to 60%, according to the National Federation of the Blind. Statistics like that, which shed light on the long list of challenges people with vision impairment face, were a driving force behind one father's attempt to help his young daughter adapt to a devastating diagnosis. Jake LaCourse of Middleborough, Massachusetts, was honored Thursday at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas for creating a game he calls BeckDot. It's designed to help his 2-year-old daughter, Rebecca, learn pre-Braille concepts. Rebecca has Usher syndrome, a rare genetic disorder that can cause profound deafness and progressive blindness. We knew the world was not going to adapt to her, LaCourse says. My entire career has been about solving problems. LaCourse is a product engineer by day. By night, he worked at home developing the game for Rebecca. The playing surface, made with a 3D printer, is about the size of a tablet. The 4 large Braille cells run across its front. When a toy, like a cow or a pig, each embedded with an electronic tag, is placed onto the tablet, the corresponding Braille dots for a cow or pig pop up. What we love to see when she plays with it is that all she tries to do is take her finger and mash the dots back down, LaCourse says, but that's her learning. The idea is to help young children learn early Braille concepts and get them ready for the long journey of adapting to a world that's built for people who can see. LaCourse wants to market the toy and sell it for about $100. It's not the first time a parent has built something for a child facing blindness. In the early 1970s, a Stanford University engineer named John Linville created the Opticon for his blind daughter Candy. The system used a small camera that users could roll across a line of print. The camera was connected to a box with an array of vibrating pins inside, and the pins would rearrange themselves into the shape of the corresponding letters as the camera moved forward. Candy went on to receive a doctoral degree in psychology. The Opticon was a high-tech innovation at its time and was widely used, says Ike Presley of the American Foundation for the Blind. Presley says LaCourse's BeckDot is commendable and could help other children. He cautions that it probably won't teach young kids the fine tactile skills they'll need to learn Braille. But there is still value to the work LaCourse is doing, he says. It gives him an opportunity to do something besides just sit around and wait for the doctors or whomever to come up with a miracle cure, Presley says, and cure is needed. Usher syndrome affects just about 20,000 people in the United States and 400,000 around the world, says Nancy Corderman, co-founder of the Usher Syndrome Society. But only about 1% has been identified, says Corderman, whose 2 children were diagnosed with a type of Usher syndrome that doesn't develop until later in life. We have people in our community who weren't diagnosed until they were 28 years old. But Usher syndrome symptoms came roaring at the LaCourse family from the start. Rebecca was profoundly deaf at birth. She wears a pink headband that keeps her cochlear implants in place. There were no immediate signs in infancy that her vision was also going, but her mother Beth suspected that something else was wrong with her baby. When doctors fully diagnosed Rebecca with Usher syndrome a little over a year ago, the family was heartbroken. I was just sick for days. I didn't want to leave the house, Beth says. All my hopes and dreams for her came crashing down. Worst case, Rebecca will probably be completely blind by the time she's a teenager. Her peripheral vision is already closing in, and eventually her sight will likely be reduced to a pinhole. Her night vision is going now, Beth says. When she's in a dark area, she says hi constantly just to get feedback. So we are constantly saying hi back to her so she knows we're right next to her. Rebecca's parents won't always be at her side, and that's what drove her father to create BeckDot. The game was honored at the Consumer Electronics Show, which did something with something called the Not Impossible Award, which cites BeckDot for its ability to break through barriers. Beth calls this my way of coping. It definitely is, Jake says. The thing that really helps me is raising awareness so we can be a small part of finding the cure. Jake has to pause to gather himself. His eldest daughter, Reagan, who is 8 years old and does not have Usher syndrome, can see that her dad is about to cry. She darts across the kitchen and wraps her arms around his waist. That's really what we want to do, he says. The segment aired January 12, 2018. Delta introduces enhanced requirements for customers traveling with service or support animals, effective March 1st, from news.delta.com. Delta Airlines is taking steps to further protect its customers, employees, and service and support animals by implementing advanced documentation requirements for those animals. This comes as a result of a lack of regulation that has led to serious safety risks involving untrained animals in flight. The new requirements support Delta's top priority of ensuring safety for its customers, employees, and trained service and support animals, while supporting the rights of customers with legitimate needs, such as disabled veterans, to travel with trained animals. Delta carries approximately 700 service or support animals daily, nearly 250,000 annually. Putting this into perspective, Delta carries more than 180 million passengers annually. Customers have attempted to fly with comfort turkeys, gliding possums known as sugar gliders, snakes, spiders, and more, ignoring the true intent of existing rules governing the transport of service and support animals can be a disservice to customers who have real and documented needs. Delta has seen an 84% increase in reported animal incidents since 2016, including urination, defecation, biting, and even a widely reported attack by a 70-pound dog. In 2017, Delta employees reported increased acts of aggression, barking, growling, lunging, and biting from, quote, service and support animals, behavior not typically seen in these animals when properly trained and working. New procedures and updated requirements. In compliance with the Air Carriers Access Act, Delta provides in-cabin travel for service and support animals without charge. The guidelines, effective March 1st, require that all customers traveling with a service or support animal show proof of health or vaccinations 48 hours in advance. In addition to the current requirement of a letter prepared and signed by a doctor or a licensed mental health professional, those with psychiatric service animals and emotional support animals will also need to provide a signed document confirming that their animal can behave to prevent untrained, sometimes aggressive, household pets from traveling without a kennel in the cabin. These measures are intended to help ensure that those customers traveling with a trained service or support animal will no longer be at risk of untrained pets attacking their working animal, as has previously been reported. The rise in serious incidents involving animals in flight leads us to believe that the lack of regulation in both health and training screening for these animals is creating unsafe conditions across U.S. air travel, said John Lofter, Delta's Senior Vice President, Corporate Safety, Security, and Compliance. As a leader in safety, we worked with our advisory board in disability to find a solution that supports those customers with a legitimate need for these animals while prioritizing a safe and consistent travel experience. In developing the updated requirements, Delta solicited the feedback and input of its 15-member advisory board on disability, a group of disability advocates established more than a decade ago and composed of diverse Delta frequent flyers with a range of disabilities. Air Carrier Access Act. As the Title 14 Code of Federal Aviation Regulations, Section 382.117 dictates, you must permit the service animal to accompany the passenger with a disability at any seat in which the passenger sits, unless the animal obstructs an aisle or other area that must remain unobstructed to facilitate an emergency evacuation. However, untrained animals that have been misidentified as service and support animals are regularly reported to occupy seats, stretch across the aisles, and move throughout the cabin during flight, often without restriction. That same regulation also requires the airlines determine whether any factors preclude travel in the cabin by a service animal. Such factors include whether the animal would pose a direct threat to the health or safety of others, and whether it would cause a significant disruption of cabin service. We are committed to consistently improving our policies, prioritizing the safety of all Delta customers and employees, said Lafter. The article continues online at the news.delta.com website. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. Please call 919-832-5138 with questions and comments. Thank you.